say in advance that some of you might know everything that I'm going to say in the next 22 minutes. And if that's true, then that makes me really happy, because this is really good stuff to know. Psychologist Thomas Gordon was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize 3 times because of his pioneering work in communication. He developed the concepts of active listening and eye messages in the 1960s. If you have read Gordon's classic book, Parent Effectiveness Training, also known as PET, and perhaps even if you haven't read it, you are familiar with these skills. The point of an eye message, for example, is to take responsibility for one's own thoughts and feelings and to communicate them in a way that makes it much easier for other people to hear, understand, and cooperate. Many people are familiar with this formula. When blank, I feel blank because blank. So, for example, you could say, when I see muddy footprints on the kitchen floor, I feel discouraged and upset because I worked hard to clean the floor and I'd like it to stay clean for a few days at least. In my experience, speaking this way results in much readier cooperation from others than using blame and name-calling, and I believe that many others have found the same results. And as a result of that, the formula has become fairly well known and well used. For example, an acquaintance of mine in college used to say, when I see you acting like a jerk, I feel that you are a jerk because you're being a jerk. Oops. You know, as a math teacher, I want the kids to know the formulas. But I want even more for them to know how those formulas are derived. Being able to work with numbers is important, but the underlying concepts are even more important. Similarly, as my college friend jokingly demonstrated, Gordon's formulas, effective as they are only as good as the values behind them. Now, Jim Haley, in his excellent talk last week, spoke of the many crises that humanity is experiencing right now. Who was here last week? He also sang a song with his daughter called Soul Shine and spoke of the wonderful, ever-evolving human consciousness. If our species survives, it will be because we are able to put this consciousness to good use. I've been thinking about this idea of soul shine and breaking dawn, and about how it feels and what it means to reach toward a ray of hope. When you reach toward the light, what exactly are you reaching for? What is it that you want to have in your hands? Because it's not photons. I don't necessarily know what lights you hold, but I can tell you mine. Imperfectly as I do it, I place my hope in mindfulness practices and my own consciousness of a values-based life. These are the shards of glitter that I reach for and cherish and try to scatter. And maybe these pieces of hope are more like photons than I knew. Metaphorically speaking, mindfulness and values-based living are both energy and matter, both consciousness and practicality. Or just like teaching math, both concepts and skills are important. So today I'm going to discuss both. I open this sermon with Thomas Gordon because he was one of a few pioneers who organized effective practices combining psychology and communication. Another such person is Marshall Rosenberg. He wrote an amazing book called Nonviolent Communication that I would love to see you all read, because it is so very simple, so true, and so effective. You can get it at the library, by the way. Here's a metaphor to explain how I feel about this book. Have you ever been thirsty, but for some reason didn't get a glass of water? You are perhaps sitting on the couch. Your mouth is dry. You really are thirsty. But you aren't getting up. Perhaps you are doing something that you don't want to interrupt. This goes on for a while. The thing you are doing comes to an end, but instead of taking the opportunity to have a drink, you start something else, and you're still thirsty. Finally, you have a drink. What took me so long? It was so simple to meet my need for water, so straightforward and satisfying to quench my thirst. So, are you thirsty? Have a glass of water. Do you have other needs, complex emotions, feelings you don't even understand? Do you feel distressed, alienated, anguished, irritated, jaded? Speaking for myself, whenever I try to take just one moment to practice compassion for myself or others, to notice my own emotions, needs and values, and those of others, even if I take only the merest, clumsiest step toward this practice, it's as beneficial and necessary to me as that glass of water. Nonviolent communication is also called collaborative communication or compassionate communication. For this talk, I will use the initials NVC. To summarize the system, this process, this practice, the worldview, I will quote from Rosenberg's book, and here's the first quote. NVC guides us to reframe the way we express ourselves and listen to others by focusing our consciousness on four areas: what we are observing, feeling, and needing, and what we are requesting to enrich our lives. The first step is to make observations while refraining from evaluation. So that's the mistake my college friend made. She made the observation, but it was all tied up in evaluation. Rosenberg says, when we combine observation with evaluation, others are apt to hear criticism and resist what we are saying. For example, I might say, you never listen to me. I may be expressing an emotional truth, but my communication would be more effective if I made it entirely specific. I could say, the last 5 times I told you something, you didn't reply. Or, sometimes when I tell you how I feel, I'm not sure if you understand me. Or, 7 times in the past 2 days, when I told you something, your first response was to disagree with me. Any of these options are simple statements of fact, and much easier to hear than blanket statements like, you never listen. The second step of NVC is to develop our vocabulary of feelings. Rosenberg lists over 200 words to express feelings, from expansive, expectant, and exultant, to edgy, embarrassed, and embittered. Importantly, and in some detail, he explains the difference between these words and words we might think are feeling words, but are in fact words used to evaluate the behavior of others. For example, instead of saying, I feel abandoned, which is really saying, you abandoned me, right? I might say, I feel lonely. I would replace, I feel cheated, with perhaps, I feel stunned. The purpose of this vocabulary is to allow us to more easily connect with other people by being clear about how we feel. The third step is to take ownership of our feelings by connecting them to our needs, and I would also add our values. Rosenberg believes that every emotion is the result of a need being either met or unmet. Different people at various times will respond differently to any given situation. Stuck in a car with 5 kindergartners playing kazoos, one person might feel irritated, even a little panicky, because her need for quiet is not being met. Someone else, on the other hand, might feel delight because his needs for celebration and joy are being met. Here, Rosenberg has a wonderful list of human needs that I have found very helpful. especially when I'm feeling distressed without knowing what I'm needing. And I also find it helpful when I have wants and I don't know if they're wants or needs. I just look at the list. It's very nice. They are listed under the headings autonomy, celebration and mourning, integrity, interdependence, play, spiritual communion, and physical nurturance. The formula here is the phrase, I feel blank because I blank. That second I is very important. Listen for the difference in these two sentences. I feel upset because you were late. And I feel upset because I expected you at 2 o'clock. The difference in subtext is profound. I could write a whole sermon on this formula alone and its implications of responsibility and trust. But it's also easy to remember and effective to use. The fourth step of nonviolent communication is to learn how to make requests of others in order to make our lives more wonderful. Rosenberg makes this distinction. Requests are received as demands when listeners believe they will be blamed or punished if they do not comply. We can help others trust that we are requesting, not demanding, by indicating our desire for them to comply only if they can do so willingly. The objective of NVC is not to change people and their behavior in order to get our way. It is to establish relationships based on honesty and empathy. Let me restate that quote. The objective of NVC is not to change people and their behavior in order to get our way. It is to establish relationships based on honesty and empathy. Is this not a vision of a beautiful world? The wonderful thing about NVC, as I have said and will say again, is that you can have this wonderful world, or at least a tiny piece of it, every time you try to practice this type of conscious, mindful compassion. And another thing that is so wonderful about it is that while I often find the grand concepts of mindfulness and compassion to be beyond my abilities in any given moment, Rosenberg breaks it down into steps that are simple, if not always easy, to practice. And here's a third wonderful thing. You don't have to be interacting with someone who knows anything about NVC. The process is effective in all kinds of situations. And a fourth wonderful thing is that you can practice it silently. Say, when you're reading annoying letters to the editor, you can inwardly listen for the feelings and needs of the person who's writing. So far, Rosenberg has shown us the four steps of observing, feeling, needing, and requesting as they pertain to our own self-expression. The second half of NVC is about applying this process when listening to others. I think it's good that he goes in that order because I don't have enough inertia about applying NVC for myself. When I'm communicating with others, especially in emotionally charged situations, self-defense can very quickly run over empathy and communication can get rocky. NVC is not always easy, but practice makes possible. Again, I invite you to read the book for more detail and explanation, and also for the examples, which are both illuminating and inspiring. For now, I will just give the briefest overview of the second half of the book. Applying the steps of observing, feeling, needing, and requesting for the purpose of understanding another is called empathic listening. Instead of explaining it, I'll just read you an example from the book. First, the counterexample. Person A says, how could I do something so stupid? Person B says, nobody's perfect. Please don't be so hard on yourself. This is not empathic listening. It may be caring and gentle listening, but it's not empathic. Here's an NVC version. Person A, how could I do something so stupid? Person B, wow, you sound really distressed because you did something you regret. The second way may sound a little stilted, but it's a conversation opener. And it opens the compassion door as well. It invites person A to talk about their feelings. It also gives them the opportunity to allow those important feelings to do their job. Recall that Rosenberg regards feelings as flags that mark met or unmet needs. I'm going to halt my summary there because I want to tell you my hopes for us today. I certainly wish that some of you will decide to read Rosenberg's book. More important, I'm hoping that all of us will leave here with a take-home lesson that we won't immediately forget. I'm hoping that each one of us will be able to hold on to at least one photon of wisdom that we can put into practice sometime soon. And I'm hoping that after we practice it once, we'll see that we want to practice again. Kind of like drinking when we're thirsty. I also want to pause to notice how remarkably well Rosenberg's vision coincides with our UU principles. In line with our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, NBC assumes that all humans have the same needs and that the world is abundant enough to meet those needs, and that humans enjoy giving and trying to make life more wonderful for others. The further principles of justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, acceptance of one another, the free and responsible search for truth and meaning, and the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, can be practiced directly using NBC. One principle that I don't see come up in sermons very often is the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. I want to put a big star by this principle today. One hugely destructive force in our nation these days, in my opinion, is the political polarization that can make collaboration nearly impossible. How can we use the democratic process within society at large when what passes for communication is just name-calling and knee-jerk non-cooperation? Has anyone else noticed that millions of Americans are constantly acting counter to their own best interests while hurting others in the process? What can we do about this? I believe the answer lies in the way we communicate with the people in our own communities. The national political sphere is such a mess, to me, that you have to be a really special person to want to deal with it. And again, that's just my opinion. I advise those of us who are overwhelmed by such a thing to do what we can to communicate compassionately with our neighbors. And I caution that this will entail listening with empathy to our enemies. I can tell you who my enemies are. They are those who do not believe in evidence, who see facts as some kind of brainwashing agenda, whose minds are big snarls of fear and irrationality, and they cause as much destruction through their very ignorance as through their actions. I believe it was Noam Chomsky who said that you cannot have a rational argument with an irrational person. But if the only arguments you have are rational arguments, how can you possibly communicate with these people, let alone convince them of anything? A couple of years ago, we heard a sermon about the Socratic method as applied to politics. I will not ever forget it. The speaker advised us to stop arguing and start asking questions. She told us to keep trying to understand the other person and that we would eventually find some common ground. I want to reiterate this message in the context of nonviolent communication and say, when all you have are rational arguments and you are communicating with an irrational person, stop being rational and start being empathic. I'm not saying we should never shout about our own feelings, never carry signs, never argue, never protest. I think it's important to do these things. But direct political action, as we've seen, only goes so far. And I believe empathically listening to one's opponents is the piece that's been missing from our society lately. I would urge anyone trying to do this, though, to remain empathic to your own feelings and needs as well. So here are my feelings. I despise my enemies, and I hate communicating with them. But guess what? My hate is not helping. One question that arose during last week's service is, how bad are things going to have to get before people get it together? If I want to be part of the consciousness that is going to save our species and our planet, I had better start practicing. My advice to myself and everyone is this. Begin with self-compassion and self-empathy. Make a practice of using the NVC process or any mindfulness practice when communicating our feelings, needs, values, and requests to others. As we get more used to how it works, begin listening to people using the same process. This is going to happen in a context that feels violent. People will speak to me in a way that hurts me, or raises my hackles, or causes distress and confusion or fear. My first instinct will be to respond defensively or offensively. Even responding constructively, trying to fix the situation, isn't necessarily the most effective response. I will have to work hard to remember empathic listening, to focus first on the other person's feelings, then their needs. Once they feel that I understand their feelings and needs, though, they will begin cooperating with the process to shed light on values and the things they wish for to make their lives more wonderful. If I really value the inherent worth and dignity of every person, if I really believe in the goal of world community, I will listen empathically to my enemies. I haven't gotten to the end of the book, but we've come to the end of my talk. So instead of continuing with the second half of NVC and giving you more information on how it works to listen empathically and other things that he talks about, he talks about anger and he talks about the use of force and other things that are good to learn about, I'm just going to extend an invitation. I really believe in Rosenberg's ideas and NVC. I've seen them work. The only thing standing between me and NVC practices is my own inertia and lack of courage. For example, when I wrote this sermon last week, I was all on fire from hearing Jim's talk and feeling a lot of certainty about what I want to do to make the world a better place. After a few days, I started thinking, the world will do what it does. Why should I put myself out there with something I care about? It's risky. It's embarrassing. And it's natural to feel that way. But I'm going to courageously shed inertia and say, I own a workbook on NVC that will guide me as I make a regular practice of compassionate communication. So here's a promise that I'm making to myself. Where's the promise? It came out of my little words. So, that's right. I'm going to use this book to make a practice of NVC. That's what I'm going to do. But if any of you would like to join me in this, I invite you to form a book group with me to study and practice NVC. The workbook I mentioned would function as a curriculum and study guide for the group, so the organizational aspect wouldn't be too difficult. So if anyone's interested, please see me after the service. And if no one's interested, I'll still pursue it on my own, because it's right for me as drinking when I'm thirsty. And let's just take a minute.